This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Americans have been celebrating Thanksgiving for nearly four centuries. We've got the rituals down, right? The Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, the turkey, maybe watching football. But the tale of the first Thanksgiving is a beautiful fiction, right? For indigenous communities, the holiday is a painful reminder of the slaughter of millions of indigenous people and the theft of their lands by outsiders. This acknowledgement isn't even all that new. The United American Indians of New England declared Thanksgiving a national day of mourning 50 years ago. A rich and complicated history of the holiday is just one of a few things to consider when many of us sit down to dinner one week from today. How we choose to remain mindful as we honor the past while being grateful for the present can be shown in a variety of ways. For most, it's through the ritual of sharing and preparing a meal. On today's show, we're going to be discussing Thanksgiving foodways. Foodways are cultural, social, economic practices relating to food, the sociology of food, if you will. We'll be discussing a potential Thanksgiving meal that honors your own family's heritage with the holiday's rich history as well. And we'll also delve into the history of plant-based eating and adapting your favorite recipes to suit various dietary habits. Joining us now to talk about Thanksgiving food and its history is Rafia Zafar, who is a foodway scholar, a professor of English, African, and African-American studies and American culture studies at Washington University in St. Louis. Rafia, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here. And I don't know.
Thank
if
you very much. Oh,
okay, great. There's always that awkward Zoom mute.
The Zoom right. Moment. Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here. I'm happy to talk about Thanksgiving from my particular corner of the world. And I will say right now, my family weren't big. It's not that they didn't do Thanksgiving, but it wasn't
the big holiday for you. Interesting.
Yeah,
all right.
We had a small family, and that probably had something to do with it.
Sure. All right. Well, let me just take a moment to introduce our other guests. So we also have with us Robin Caldwell, who's a public relations consultant and a food writer who's written about Black foodways and food traditions. Robin, welcome to the 21st to you as well.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And also joining us is Jam Rohr, owner of the Peoria-based meal prep service Upbeat Jams. Jam, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you so much for having me.
Listeners, I also want to invite you into our conversation. We're speaking, as I said, about Thanksgiving foodways, food traditions, and the history of the foods we eat. And we want to know, is there a specific dish you'll be making this Thanksgiving that has a story behind it? Maybe you have some personal family modifications or changes you make to the sort of standard Norman Rockwell Thanksgiving dinner. We want to hear about it. Let us know about your Thanksgiving plans. 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show. So, Rafi, I'm going to begin with you. Thanksgiving is known typically for these, as I said, sort of this Norman Rockwell painting, right? You have turkey and gravy and cranberry sauce and pumpkin pie. Where did these foods come from? Why are they the most popular Thanksgiving dishes?
Well, just I immediately think of advertising, and I know advertising had something to do with it, and gravy, the industrialization of gravy and foods like that in the 19th and 20th century. But if we go back really far and we think again of our indigenous fellow citizens and the history and the sort of the mythology, what in their basic form these foods are indigenous foods, turkey, cranberries, if there's corn and beans, these are, you know, American, meaning North American foods, you know, produce and critters that people took upon themselves and shared. It's not clear that there were turkeys. It's not clear what people ate because there weren't video cameras. You know, there wasn't NBC or the 21st panning in to see how the two groups immediately celebrated. The Thanksgiving initially was only for the settlers, if I'm not mistaken, and the Native Americans, who of course had been there, were invited, which is not to say that they, you know, the Native Americans justly are credited for helping, right? The whole notion of hospitality, helping these people who had sort of shown up on their doorstep and really didn't know the first thing about provisioning for themselves. So that's kind of a short, very abbreviated history, because we know what followed, right? The people who seemed to be hapless, you know, hapless arrivals turned into an occupying force.
Yeah, and it didn't take too long for the tables to turn there, I guess you might say. Yeah. Robin, you've written several articles that highlight Black foodways and food traditions. The history of Black military cooks, holiday breakfast inspiration from Black-owned inns in the South, and honoring the past and present of holidays like Juneteenth. Can you talk about what your time as a food writer has taught you about the relationship between culture and food, specifically Black food traditions?
That is probably less about the food and the tradition and more about the people. Mm-hmm. The one of the most important things to me personally, and I guess it's my guiding force, if you will, is that I've learned about my family's lineage and heritage. I call myself a Bamalachian because a part of my family is from Alabama, another part of it's from Appalachia. And I think about how we ate and what we ate and how we prepared our foods, but I also think about the hospitality extended, the way we view the visitors at our home, the way we viewed each other, using food as more or less as a character in our own story. So that's what I've learned. If I've learned nothing else, I've learned that.
And Jam, I want to bring you into the conversation as well. You're the owner of the Peoria-based sort of Central Illinois meal prep service, Upbeat Jams. Mm-hmm. Before we get into specifically on Thanksgiving menu and plans, tell us a little bit about the business itself. How did the idea come about? What's your sort of origin story on that?
Sure. So Upbeat Jams started in late 2019, early 2020. I had started an Instagram account where I was just sharing recipes that I was making from home with a music recommendation, whether it's just a song by an artist or an album. Something to listen to while you're enjoying the food. But then in 2020, over the summer, I was having meals with my friend, local artist Jackie Music, every Wednesday. And one day she asked me if I'd be interested in making a week of meals for her, which was a really fun thing for me to do. I was already cooking for myself anyway. So I just started making meals for her, kind of learning new dishes that I could make with the produce we had locally available in Peoria. That I could get down at the Riverfront Market. And then a few more friends asked and a few more friends asked. And then soon I just kind of outgrew my tiny at-home kitchen. So I found a space where I could cook and just decided, you know, this is something that's clearly needed in the Peoria area. We don't really have a lot of options for a dedicated vegan facility. And now I also am a dedicated gluten-free facility, which wasn't really available here either. So yeah, I just slowly kind of grew into this business that's grown into my full-time profession. And it's just been a really great time.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we're going to continue this conversation. We've already got some callers coming in. We need to take a break. Please stay on the line if you can at 800-222-9455. We're talking about Thanksgiving foodways. 1 week from today, many of us will be sitting down to enjoy a Thanksgiving meal. And we want to know what your family's traditions are and, you know, is thinking about the past, the sometimes complicated past of Thanksgiving, part of your family tradition, or should it be? We're going to ask those questions when we come back here on the 21st, 800-222-9455. If you want to join us, that's 800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at 21st Show. That's at 21ST Show. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about Thanksgiving foodways today, and we're having this discussion with Rafia Zafar, who's a professor of English, African and African American Studies and American Culture Studies at Washington University in St. Louis. Robin Caldwell, who's a food writer who's written about Black foodways and food traditions, and Jam Roar, owner of the Peoria-based meal prep service Upbeat Jams. 800-222-9455. If you want to join our conversation, that's 800-222-9455. And I want to begin with, let's go to the phones to begin this segment. Christy is on the line from Normal. Christy, thank you for calling in. Okay, we're having some issue with the phone there. We're going to see if we can get that sorted out from Christy. We can go back to that. Rafi, let me come back to you. I mentioned this earlier, that Thanksgiving is actually a day of mourning for some indigenous peoples, but I'm guessing the vast majority of Americans mainly still think of it as an opportunity to eat good food or, you know, watch football or parades on TV, whatever it is. Should we be complicating our relationship with this holiday?
Yeah, I mean, I think the United States in general, and hopefully the globe, is in sort of a reckoning or a realignment with what, you know, what have been the myths, right? Myths are origin stories, but, you know, origin stories we can think of as the, you know, the lion, the, you know, the parable of when the lions write history, the history will be different. So if we truly are, as we have, you know, the nation pundits and leaders have been saying, if we are truly a country of e pluribus unum, then everyone's stories need to be told. So there's not one story. I think there is a braid of stories. There are stories that conflict. There are stories that are contentious. And there are, you know, stories that perhaps can lead to, if not a more harmonious future, but a future that acknowledges that we are human beings. And that there have been unpleasant and terrible times, but that one can move forward. I think Thanksgiving is one of those holidays where you can do that. Personally, in my extended family, there are Native American folks, but there are also, you know, folks from African Americans, European Americans. And as a family, as a child growing up, I remember my mother, who was European American, saying to me when I came home one day from school and talking about the Puritans, it was obviously this time of year, and probably turkeys, and my mother saying, aren't you, and this is when you think about it, my mother many years ago saying, aren't you going to learn about something other than the Puritans? She said, I think you should have that down by now. And I thought that was pretty funny for in retrospect, my Midwestern mother saying, there was another history. And of course, she's somebody who came from a small town in Western Michigan and arrived in New York and had a very, you know, had an interracial marriage before it was legal in many states of the Union, and had, you know, the kind of life that she envisioned that was more diverse and inclusive and a place that she thought she could raise her children in. So for her, she knew she wasn't a historian. She only had a high school education. She knew there was more to the story. And so I, as a second grader, I couldn't tell her why it was the same story. But of course, I grew up and, you know, learned and read like everyone, right? It's that there are other people in the room there, you know, in the room of the story, in the room of the myth. And I think it is not a zero sum game. It only adds to our appreciation of Thanksgiving to see like where we were, but where we can go.
I love that visual metaphor there. The idea of adding the idea of other people in the room. That's great. Go ahead. I'm sorry if I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No. I mean, I think that's really important. There've always been, I mean, it's in some ways, I think of it as like the, you know, when some people say, well, English should be the only language in the United States. The United States has always had multiple languages. And I'm not even talking about, you know, Navajo, right? Think about the Navajo code talkers in the 1940s who helped win the war by being able to speak a language that only Navajos knew. But beyond that, that the first, like some of the first novels that we can think of in the United States were written in languages like German or French, right? It isn't only, you know, or Spanish, right? There are a lot of people in the room. E pluribus unum, I feel it's there. it's there for a purpose, even though maybe at the time people didn't really get the entire beautiful, you know, United States. But I think there was someone, the creator, whomever, was saying E Pluribus Unum is an important tenet for us to hold on to. And I think Thanksgiving can be one of those places we can do that.
Yeah, right there on the money from many one. Robin, you've written a chapter for an upcoming book for the University of Illinois Press. It's called Food Instagram, coming out in April. The chapter is about Black women and hospitality in food. It's just something you've written about. Can you talk a little bit about that history, and especially how it comes out around the holidays?
The hospitality, how can I put this? And it's not because it's a sensitive topic, but the thing about our hospitality, or what I grew up with at the very least, and what I know to be Black women's hospitality, is that it's probably rooted in discomfort. So and keeping with this topic, when I think about how many of us who are descended of enslaved Africans, we didn't come here obviously voluntarily, and we had to adapt, but we also had to adapt at the good pleasure of other people. So I come from domestic workers. I come from women. And in fact, in one of our documentations about our enslaved great-great-great-grandmother, I found out that not only was she a cook, but she was a midwife. So she brought children here and she fed people. And I think the way that it showed up post-emancipation, and when we had some freedom and agency to create home for ourselves and for our visitors, it came from a place of having to live in discomfort in many cases, making sure that whomever steps foot across our thresholds has something to eat, something to drink, a place to sit. I laugh constantly about my grandmother, who was a pistol, but her Appalachian upbringing and her grandmother was Irish. They had this way about them that even if they didn't like you, if you walked into their home, the first thing they would ask you is, do you want to eat or drink something? Have a seat. And then you would catch shade from them. You know, whatever, they roll their eyes or what have you, but you were not going to leave their home without feeling some sense of hospitality.
So, well, let me ask you then, do foods bring up warm feelings for you, or is it more conflicted?
It's somewhat conflicted in a sense that, and only because I am a researcher as well as a writer. So I see things constantly in media that are being appropriated, and that makes me somewhat conflicted about how I tell these stories about the food and the food ways. But otherwise, it brings up the warm and fuzzies all the time. I mean, I think about how my great-grandma was a wonderful woman in the neighborhood, how she would go to the farmer's market at the end of the day. And I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. So she would go to the West Side Market or to the Central Market at the end of the day, where she could have, you know, negotiate with the vendors to buy more with less. And then she would come home and she would have us distribute bags to people either in the family or in the neighborhood who didn't have nearly as much money as that food cost. But no one would ever know that. She did it very quietly and lovingly. And so I always have the warm and fuzzies when I think about food. Forgive me for sounding colloquial, but I do. I actually do this work based on a warm feeling.
Nice. Listeners, 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation in the minutes we have remaining. And Jam, let me ask you, Thanksgiving is... it's a meal that for some people is rooted in tradition, but there's also an opportunity to sort of reinvent and constantly update what the meaning of the meal is and what the foods that we consume are. And I took a look at Upbeat Jam's Thanksgiving food menu. It has everything from jackfruit turkey to a lentil, quote-unquote, meatloaf, to pumpkin pecan pie to cashew mac and cheese. For people who might be new to a vegetarian or vegan diet, or maybe serving their guests of the younger generation, but are not familiar with cooking plant-based, where should people start when cooking for people with, you know, diets that do not involve meat?
Sure. I think, for me, when I was starting out trying to go vegan, I decided to go vegan and plant-based because of some pain that I was dealing with. And I kept reading whole food plant-based diet will help. And I thought it can't hurt. So I really had no idea where to start. So I started by just figuring out what is it that I want to eat and what are things that I can find that can replace or like kind of satisfy that craving I had. So when I came up with this menu, I was thinking about what are things that would still be good for people who are maybe interested in trying plant-based eating, but don't want to necessarily dive into how big and intimidating going fully vegan can be. So things that could still taste good and satisfy those cravings. So I've got things like the jackfruit turkey, where I cut it up and I marinate it just the same way I would turkey in years past. I mean, I used to make a big Thanksgiving feast with just the standard American diet kind of foods. So I'm still cooking in the same ways, but just sort of using different ingredients. So the jackfruit turkey, I still cook the same way I would have cooked a turkey. I marinate it overnight, and then I season it the same way I would a turkey, and then I roast it in the oven, and it kind of comes like in a shredded sort of form. And then I still do mashed potatoes. I mean, potatoes are one of my favorite foods, so I still have mashed potatoes with a mushroom gravy. So when I would make gravy in the past, it would be taking what has kind of come out of cooking the turkey and then whisking that with cornstarch and seeing, getting the gravy we're most familiar with. But with this, I kind of take the elements that are reminiscent of eating meat, like the saltiness and kind of the beefy flavors, but I get it through other plant-based things like coconut aminos, where it's not so salty that it's just makes you really thirsty and dry out, but it still has the sweet flavor profile in it too. And then something that I also became really interested in when I started doing this Upbeat Jams is just getting a lot of feedback from other people. And what I've noticed most is that people really want to eat the things that they grew up eating still, but just in a veganized form.
Okay.
For my family, my mom always made a corn casserole. When we do Thanksgiving, everybody would bring something to contribute to the Thanksgiving dinner. And my mom always made corn casserole. So when I grew up and made it on my own, I realized like this really isn't something that's too complex to make vegan. And it's something that is easy to share that anybody, no matter your cooking experience, could make that vegan. So really it's the best advice I could give is just kind of what is it that you want to have and, you know, what resources are available to still satisfy all of those needs and cravings.
And find a way to veganize it. All right, I think we can fit in one phone call before the end of our conversation here. Christy has been holding patiently from Normal. Thank you, Christy. Thanks for calling in.
Hi.
Lemon pie. Go ahead.
Yes, lemon pie. The E Pluribus Unum concept is really alive in our family, and so we have representation from my African American tradition, my husband's Midwestern traditions, and even some people from India have been part of our Thanksgiving. I am not known for being a good cook, but I do make pies, and pies are my usual contribution to the meal. But one year, I happened to be making some lemon meringue pies at my sister's house using an unfamiliar mixer. and as I was mixing the meringue, it just sprayed all over her entire kitchen. Someone said it looked like a horse sneezed. If you know what that meringue.
Sure. And we are almost out of time. I'm sorry to rush you, but so I understand.
But
you
now
make.
We have to do that.
Every year.
Now we have to have that every year. Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Christy, so much for the call. And I want to thank our guests. They have been Rafia Zafer from Washington University in St. Louis, Robin Caldwell, who's written a lot about Black foodways and Jam Roar of Upbeat Jams in Peoria. I'm sorry, that is all the time we have for our show today. This is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey.